Sorry, Arwen, we're going to interrupt you there. We're going to interrupt you because David Cameron is speaking outside number 10.
The United Kingdom come to an end. And I know that that sentiment was shared by people not just across our country, but also around the world, because of what we've achieved together in the past and what we can do together in the future. So now it is time for our United Kingdom to come together and to move forward. A vital part of that will be a balanced settlement, fair to people in Scotland, and importantly to everyone in England, Wales and Northern Ireland as well. Let us remember first why we had this debate and why it was right to do so. The Scottish National Party was elected in Scotland in 2011 and promised a referendum on independence. We could have tried to block that. We could have tried to put it off. But just as with other big issues, it is right to take and not to duck the big decision. I am a passionate believer in our United Kingdom, and I wanted more than anything for our United Kingdom to stay together. But I am also a Democrat, and it was right that we respected the SNP's majority in Holyrood and gave the Scottish people their right to have their say. Let us also remember why it was right to ask the definitive question, yes or no. Because now the debate has been settled for a generation, or as Alex Salmond has said, perhaps for a lifetime. So there can be no disputes, no reruns. We have heard the settled will of the Scottish people. Scotland voted for a stronger Scottish Parliament backed by the strength and security of the United Kingdom. And I want to congratulate the No campaign for that, for showing people that our nations really are better together. I also want to pay tribute to Yes Scotland for a well-fought campaign and to say to all those who did vote for independence, we hear you. We now have a chance, a great opportunity to change the way the British people are governed and change it for the better. Political leaders on all sides of the debate now bear a heavy responsibility to come together and work constructively to advance the interests of people in Scotland as well as those in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, for each and every citizen of our United Kingdom. To those in Scotland, sceptical of the constitutional promises that were made, let me say this. We have delivered on devolution under this government and we will do so again in the next Parliament. The three pro-union parties have made commitments, clear commitments, on further powers for the Scottish Parliament. We will ensure that those commitments are honoured in full. And I can announce today that Lord Smith of Kelvin, who so successfully led Glasgow's Commonwealth Games, has agreed to oversee the process to take forward these devolution commitments with powers over tax, spending and welfare, all agreed by November, and draft legislation published by January. Just as the people of Scotland will have more power over their affairs, so it follows that the people of England, Wales and Northern Ireland must have a bigger say over theirs. The rights of these voters need to be respected, preserved and enhanced. It is absolutely right that a new and fair settlement for Scotland should be accompanied by a new and fair settlement that applies to all parts of our United Kingdom. In Wales, there are proposals to give the Welsh Government and Assembly more powers. And I want Wales to be at the heart of the debate on how to make our United Kingdom work for all our nations. In Northern Ireland, we must work to ensure that the devolved institutions function effectively. But I have long believed that a crucial part missing from this national discussion is England. We have heard the voice of Scotland, and now the millions of voices of England must also be heard. The question of English votes for English laws, the so-called West Lothian question, requires a decisive answer. So just as Scotland will vote separately in the Scottish Parliament on their issues of tax, spending and welfare, so too England, as well as Wales and Northern Ireland, should be able to vote on these issues. And all this must take place in tandem with and at the same pace as the settlement for Scotland. I hope that this is going to take place on a cross-party basis. I've asked William Hague to draw up these plans. We will set up a cabinet committee right away, and proposals will also be ready to the same timetable. I hope the Labour Party and other parties will contribute. It is also important that we have wider civic engagement about how to improve governance throughout our United Kingdom, including how to empower our great cities. And we will say more about this in the coming days. This referendum has been hard fought. It has stirred strong passions. It has electrified politics in Scotland and caught the imagination of people across the whole of our United Kingdom. It will be remembered as a powerful demonstration of the strength and vitality of our ancient democracy. Record numbers registered to vote, and record numbers cast their vote. We should all be proud of that. It has reminded us how fortunate we are that we're able to settle these vital issues at the ballot box peacefully and calmly. Now we must look forward and turn this into the moment when everyone, whichever way they voted, comes together to build that better, brighter future for our entire United Kingdom. Thank you very much and good morning.
That was David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, speaking outside number 10 Downing Street. You're listening to Morning Ireland at 13 minutes past 7 on the morning that Scottish voters have rejected independence in a referendum by 55% to 45%, almost all the votes in. David Cameron saying there that the debate has been settled for a generation. He's promised he will grant new powers to Scotland, England, Wales and Northern Ireland, more powers on tax spending and welfare to be transferred to Scotland. We've heard the voice of Scotland, he said. Now it's time to hear the voice of England. Plenty more on the Scottish referendum between now and 9 o'clock, with apologies to Arwen Foley at AA Road Watch. We will get a traffic update a little later in the programme, but let's hear what it says in the papers this morning. A little late to get the Scottish result. It's Caroline Murphy.
Well, yes, screams the headline in the Irish Daily Star this morning. But no, it's not an incorrect prediction from Scotland. It's actually all about soccer. Ireland looks certain, says the story, to get the green light today to host four games at the Euro 2020 soccer tournament. A source we're told said the Irish camp will be devastated if the bid fails, as it's already believed to be in the bag with today's lunchtime announcement in Geneva, a mere formality. Was asking Maria Doherty to join the Office Lotto Syndicate a mere formality meanwhile? Maria started work in a Donegal call centre just last Monday, we're told, on almost every front page this morning. But by Wednesday, as she says on the front of the Irish Sun, she was being paid an amount she would have had to work nearly 25 years to earn. Maria had become the 13th member of the Office Syndicate shortly before Wednesday's lotto draw, and they scooped the 4.9 million jackpot that evening. If I didn't have €2 change, I probably wouldn't have done it, she's quoted as telling reporters, as the papers feature pictures of her celebrating. Sincredible, says the Irish Sun. But there's good news for the rest of us too, at least according to the headline in the front of the Irish Independent. Alongside their picture of a smiling Maria, the headline on the lead story is, "We'll thrive for a decade." It's about the economy, of course. We can look forward to a decade of sustained growth, says the piece, as new figures show the economy bouncing back at a rate few predicted. But don't get too excited. Taoiseach warns against big tax cut in budget, is the headline on the front of the Irish Times. Arthur Beasley says, Enda Kenny warned last night that resurgent economic growth would not free the government to deliver a big tax cut in next month's budget. We're told he declared that the decisions taken in coming weeks could secure Ireland's recovery or threaten it. The Taoiseach, it's explained, was speaking at a business dinner, and the headline on it all on the front of the Examiner also reports on what he said. Budget priority is to cut 52% income tax rate, is the headline there. We're told Mr. Kenny said the government's priority was to reduce that rate on low and middle income earners, and that he labelled it as anti-enterprise, anti-investment and anti-jobs. Perhaps we should all be a little more anti-tablets and smartphones when it comes to our children, at least according to the lead story in the Irish Daily Mail today. Our children learning first words on apps, says the headline, while the story adds that this may stunt their development. We're told parenting and psychology experts have voiced their concerns that uncontrolled use of the internet along with smartphones and tablets could create a generation unable to catch a ball or cross a road, out of touch with reality, unable to relate socially, and perhaps unable even to bond with their mothers. But finally this morning, no problem at all apparently with the bond between Rory and GMAC. As the Ryder Cup beckons, the Mail has a front page piece about the pair, the cup and the court case. McIlroy welcomed the judge's instruction to mediate with his former management, we're told. It's what we've been trying to do for the last 6 months, he said. And as for his possible partnership next week, I'd love to play with GMAC, he said. There are no problems between us.
Thank you very much indeed, Caroline Murphy. At 17 minutes past seven, in a few moments, Brian Finn will be here with the business news. But the latest from the Scotland poll: should Scotland be an independent country? Well, 1.5 million people think it should, but 1.9 think it should not. And that's with practically all of the count in. It's 17 minutes past seven. Brian Finn is here. And of course, the currency sterling has been a big story in all of this. What would happen? How has it been fluctuating?
Not too much fluctuation, Christopher. The pound hit a 2-year high against the euro and a 2-week high against the US dollar overnight, as those early results indicated that Scottish voters had said no to departing the UK, but they had been pricing in this no vote for the last few days. In early Asian trade overnight, we saw sterling peaking at 78.12 pence against the euro. The pound was up nearly 1% against the US dollar at $1.65.25. It has come back a little since as profit taking goes on this morning, but that might be expected. Traders seem to have been pricing in this vote for the past few days, as I said, as sterling began its ascent earlier in the week. A relief rally might be expected today as markets begin to concentrate once again on the strong performance that the UK economy has been putting in for the last few months and even over the last year, with unemployment falling and interest rate hikes on the agenda. In other business news, the Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba will start trading on the New York Stock Exchange today. The company priced shares in its initial public offering at $68 a share after last night's market close, raising nearly $22 billion on a valuation of $168 billion. That's more than the value of Twitter, LinkedIn and eBay combined. The IPO will mint a number of new Chinese billionaires and will also net a tidy sum for Yahoo, which is a big shareholder in Alibaba and has agreed to sell down some of its shares as part of an agreement. Apple's long-awaited iPhone 6 and 6 Plus are out today in the US, the UK, Germany, Japan and a number of other countries. Customers bought 4 million phones on the first day of pre-orders, setting a pace to beat Apple's record of 9 million iPhone sales in a previous opening weekend. Today is E-Day. Businesses are being reminded that from today, public sector bodies will stop sending and receiving cheques to and from businesses. SMEs are still the biggest users of cheques in Ireland, and all enterprises are being asked to review the way they transact payments and to look at cards and e-payments as a more efficient alternative. Cheque usage is still declining here, but still a massive 61 million cheques will have been sent in Ireland this year. Let's take a look at those currencies as they stand right now. The euro is at just above $1.29 and around 78.5 pence sterling.
Thank you indeed, Brian. It's 19 minutes past seven. After the break, we'll be talking to Alex Massey of The Spectator magazine. 21 minutes past seven. We're joined on the line from Glasgow by Alex Massey, a journalist with The Spectator magazine. Good morning to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning.
Now, you back in February were talking about the danger of the Yes campaign, saying there was a real imperiling situation here. You were proved to be right quite in the last number of weeks. How do you regard it this morning? How do you see it?
Well, it's a grey, pallid, overcast, rather dull morning in Glasgow here, which obviously fits the mood of Scottish nationalists and the wider Yes campaign movement after a night in which their hopes to pull off one of the great constitutional earthquakes in not just British but world political history, I think, have been dashed, and dashed a little more comfortably than many of us thought.
You were having no truck with the Yes campaign from the get-go. You were saying the economics didn't stack up.
I think that what happened was that the Yes campaign needed to get a draw, if you like, on the economic question of Scotland's prosperity as an independent country if they were to have a chance of getting a majority of the votes. And they didn't quite manage it. They came quite close, and in some ways it's a testament to the power of the idea of Scottish independence that there remained many voters who, despite thinking that their own personal economic circumstances would not be improved, in fact would be harmed by independence, were still willing to give the idea a try, were still willing to endorse the idea. Against that, there was, as it turned out, a silent majority who favoured the union, who perhaps considered independence, peered over the edge of the cliff and so on, if you like, but drew back and decided not to jump. You know, there's an obvious correlation when you look at the voting patterns between wealth and backing the union. You know, wealthier and older voters were enormously more likely to endorse the status quo, or at least endorse Scotland remaining part of the United Kingdom, part of Great Britain, while it was those voters in poorer areas who were more likely to endorse the SNP.
Now, in addition to the economic arguments, you also wrote quite thoughtfully about the idea of what it means to be Scottish, also what it means to be Britain, to be British. You said, I'm always Scottish, but also when it suits British too, a country where you travel to very different places and still always come home without having been abroad. That's your perspective on travelling north to Scotland from England.
Yes, and I think although the No campaign didn't emphasise questions of identity, questions of, you know, sort of kinship, family, sentiment, history and so on, those nevertheless played a large part in deciding many voters' preferences. You know, again, the more British you feel, the more likely it was that you are to vote no. And there were a decent number of voters, I think, who in the final weeks of the campaign thought about the questions of, as I say, you know, family, history, sentiment and so on, and were a little surprised, perhaps, by the extent to which Britain and Britishness mattered to them. They hadn't quite expected to feel these things so deeply, so personally, so viscerally in many cases. And I think that contributed to the no votes victory and so on. As, of course, in a curious sense, did the fact that the turnout was so extremely high, you know, above 90% in many places, although crucially only 75% in Glasgow and below 80% in the other Yes campaign stronghold of Dundee. But that, because turnout was so high in most of the country, that actually eliminated the Yes campaign's perceived advantage in terms of getting their vote out, because since everybody was voting, there was no advantage to be had, if you like. And that too was, I think, an important factor in the producing the result we've seen.
Alex Massey of The Spectator magazine, thank you very much for joining us on the line from Glasgow. The time is 25 minutes past seven.
Almost all of the results in, Scotland has voted to reject independence by just over, by nearly 56% to just over 44%. Almost 2 million votes against just over 1.5 million votes. One more area left to declare, that's the Highlands, but the result in no doubt at this stage. Still with us in our studio, Fiona Ness from the Sunday Business Post and also from Scotland. Steve Aiken, CEO of British-Irish Chamber of Commerce, and also historian Dermot Ferriter is with us. And Dermot, I'm conscious that this result is coming almost 100 years to the week that the Home Rule Bill for Ireland passed through Westminster. In a historical context, Scotland has decided to walk away from independence this time, but only just.
It's a little bit more than only just. It's interesting to go back to 100 years because it was not just an Irish question back then as far as Scotland was concerned. There was also, of course, a Scottish Home Rule movement. There had been a Scottish Home Rule movement since the 1880s, and they were watching very closely what was going on. But what intervened, of course, was the First World War, and in many respects that threw the Scottish Nationalist campaign off course for many years. But, you know, when you consider the 45% vote today, and you look historically at what Scottish nationalists have been able to achieve in percentage terms, it's a very, very significant achievement. I mean, the Scottish Nationalist Party got 45% in the Holyrood elections in 2011. The figure is back there now. They weren't able to push it over the 50. But if you look historically at their inability to seriously challenge the two bigger parties, you can see how far they have travelled. I mean, even back in 1979, if you look at the first attempt at a referendum, they couldn't even muster one third of the electorate to vote for a fairly weak parliament anyway, or what was proposed as a fairly weak parliament. So in that sense, they have made very significant inroads. But even if you look after the Scotland Act in 1998, after the beginnings of devolution, trace all the opinion polls looking at support for Scottish nationalism, they never went beyond really one third of the electorate, and at times they were as low as 23%. So to get up to 45% is a very, very significant achievement. Alex Salmond has secured his place in the history books in that sense. He played quite a clever game. He has been described as a gradualist, if you look back at the evolution of his career, but he had to seize this opportunity when the opportunity was there, and he made quite a good fist of it. He wasn't able to get there. He wasn't able to get them over the line. There are all sorts of different reasons for that. But if you look at Scottish nationalism now as a force, compared to Scottish nationalism as a force even 20 or 30 years ago, it's very, very significant. And he has spoken repeatedly about this being a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yes. But if you were 16 in Scotland on Thursday and you are voting for the first time, in 50 years you will be 66. Who is to say that you are not going to get the opportunity to vote again? So there's an interesting generational perspective on that, and obviously it will be described in some quarters as a win-win situation for Salmond, in the sense that he lost this particular vote, but there has been this promise given. Now, it's an ill-defined promise, it yes. has to be said, and this is where it's relevant again to what happened in Ireland 100 years ago. Home rule is not necessarily a neat solution to a complex problem for either nationalists or unionists, as we discovered through our own history. So that'll have to be defined. But certainly he will be seen as somebody who highlighted what many Scots would regard as an unsatisfactory situation, particularly with regard to the collapse of the Tories and who is running government at Westminster and who is making decisions for Scotland. That has all got to be reconfigured. And in that sense, Salmond's legacy is going to be a very, very significant one. But he is facing a particular challenge that was also faced by Irish nationalists, if you go way back, when they couldn't succeed in some of their original aims. How do you keep the nationalist momentum going? And is Alex Salmond the person to try and keep that nationalist momentum going? But certainly he is somebody who has contributed very significantly.
Fiona, David Cameron, when we heard him just after 7 o'clock, was saying that the independence issue has now been settled for a generation. For people like you who voted yes, are you happy to define yourselves as British for effectively another generation?
I've never been happy to define myself as British. One of the hardest things is when you're filling out that form and you don't get the option to put in your nationality as Scottish. So no, I don't think so. I think we have a word for the kind of weather we have today, and it's dreich, and it's a dreich day for Scotland today.
Steve Aiken, more powers for England, David Cameron promised us. As Dermot was saying, an ill-defined promise, but this is going to change the landscape of the United Kingdom and is going to give more powers to the regions. It's going to mean a very different relationship between Ireland and all of the United Kingdom.
I think it is. I think it's got to be. And I was very interested in listening to what the Prime Minister was saying. You can see already discussions in Wales. You can see the regions, particularly sort of the northwest, where Manchester is a manufacturing powerhouse that we've got a lot of links with as well. I think it's going to be a game changer, and I think everything has moved on, and I think that we're looking into a new sort of era of sort of relationships across these islands, and particularly for the business community, there's going to be a lot of opportunities, and I imagine a few challenges as well across all these islands.
Steve Aiken from the British Irish Chamber of Commerce, Fiona Ness from the Sunday Business Post, and historian Dermot Ferter. Stay with us, plenty more to come on Scotland between now and 9 o'clock. It's 7:31. You're listening to Morning Ireland on RTE Radio 1 and RTE News Now.